My apologies to anyone who kind of got startled there, because I know the volume. I had it set a little bit too high on the Ustream here. So I apologize for that. Welcome to the show, a show that has yet to be named. In Chicago, I'm Mario Scalise. In California, Jason Gaze. What's up, Jason?
What's up, guys? I am here. I am not on fire. Unlike the rest of my state, I'm alive. I'm not smoldering. I'm not smoking. A couple days ago, I could see flames from my house, but the show was more important, so I had the firefighters put the fires out.
There are like 15 fires there.
Yes.
Are you a suspect in any one of them?
No, I'm not. Although, the fire that's by my house that I could see on Sunday from my house, it was actually arson that was caused it. So some sick people decided that they were going to start fires because there were other fires already going on and they could get away with it. And hopefully they catch those people.
Okay. Now it seems like some of this stuff's not coming in properly. So I guess you guys are just going to have to fill this in, making sure that this is all through the internet. So I guess sometimes if an internet connection isn't working too good, the sound quality isn't going to be working too good. So you guys have to keep keep us up to date. If it is improving, let us know. If it sounds like absolute crap and you can't hear any word we're saying, please just let us know, because there's no point in us to keep on talking if you guys aren't listening, although you probably shouldn't be listening anyway. But we do have to do
all
the
right,
show.
Does this sound better?
Mario's louder. Huh. I'm louder. Apparently, Jason, I should have you a little louder. All right. Okay. All right, let's get this out then. I think we should be good to go. I think we should be good to go right now if it's...
Hey, it's the third live show. We're allowed to have some technical difficulties.
Well, no, this is actually pretty, at least as far as my standpoint, it's actually pretty common. Up Jace a tad. Apparently they want to hear you more than me.
Just mute Scalise, and we got ourselves a real show. Okay. Me talking to the people.
About the Bears. About the re-energized Bears. About the Bears who for that game against the Vikings, they just weren't themselves, and last week they turned things around. Didn't they, Jason? Didn't they turn things around? Now they're playoff bound?
Well, I think we have to get careful on one thing. Let's just go flashback 2 weeks. Green Bay game, they had an awesome, or 3 weeks. Green Bay game, they had an awesome comeback. And I was busy. Everyone in Chicago was busy saying, this is the Bears team. They're back. They're going to go after the Packers. They're going to win this division. I think every single Bear fan and Bear player in the organization, everyone kind of believed in the fact that that team was going to win that division, that they were going to come back. They were going to beat the Vikings. They were going to beat the Eagles. And they were going to beat the Lions and go into that bye week with a great record, maybe a game and a half, 2 games back on the Packers. But what happened was the Minnesota Viking game got in the way, and they played bad. They got beat. And people were like, oh, what's going on? And then you flash forward to the Eagles game, where the offense played good. But up until a minute 47, I think every single Bears fan out there thought their season was over with. And what happened? Brian Griese had a fabulous drive. The headset went out, and they ran the two-minute drill perfectly, 97 yards, under a minute 50, and no timeouts. 9 seconds left, Griese hits Muhammad, and we got a touchdown. But let's just go back and remember, in that entire game, we can't forget of the things the Bears did wrong, because there were a lot of things in that game that the Bears didn't do right, that winning teams should do. And the Philadelphia Eagles also failed in those areas, and that's why the Bears won that game. It wasn't a game the Bears deserved to win. And let's not get all caught up and get excited about the fact that this team is back and ready. The thing you should get excited about is the fact that this team does have playoff potential. It has a chance of making the playoffs, mm-hmm. But it's no guarantee. I'm not going to come off like a cocky guy like I did when they beat the Packers, where they had a fantastic second half of football. Greasy looked great. And that team looked like it was gelling and ready to just kick some butt the rest of the season. No, it wasn't. Did you see the Bears make any stops for pretty much 4 quarters defensively? No. The Philadelphia Eagles, did they not just shoot themselves on the foot, Mario?
Yeah. Oh, no, there's no question the Bears didn't deserve that win. They just kind of were the better of two rather decent playing teams. Because, I mean, it wasn't necessarily an ugly game. You know, the Bears really didn't turn the ball over at all. So it wasn't just an ugly game going back and forth, but neither team really showed that they were a clear-cut playoff team. I think, and you kind of alluded to it, with 2 minutes left, everyone thought the game was over. And what obviously won the game was that drive. So that drive kind of changed a lot of people's minds. And you can't have a 2-minute portion of a football game change your mind that drastically.
Yeah, and I realize the most important part about that football game is that the Bears won the game. That's the number one most important thing. However, you can't forget 4 quarters of a football game. Everything but 2 minutes, the Eagles outplayed the Bears in most areas. Now, in the turnover margin, neither team forced any. Offensively, both the Bears and Eagles shot themselves in the foot in the red zone. And the reason the Bears shot themselves in the foot was because they didn't do the little things. Bernard Berrien failed to make a key block on one of the linebackers, and because of that, McKee got tackled at the one. And then on third down, Brian Greasy made a mistake and fumbled the football. And they had to settle for a field goal from the 1-yard line. Inexcusable. They need to get sixes out of those situations. And on the other side, the Eagles obviously continue to shoot themselves on the foot. But bottom line is this Bears defense did not play well. It did not play good enough. And when you have the Bears offense playing better than your defense, then you know the fact that you're going to have to work hard every single week.
Yeah, so while there is a playoff possibilities, it's contingent on that team pretty much almost maxing out. Would you say that this team needs to max out every single week? I'm not talking about as far as effort, but as far as doing things right.
I think they have to consistently every single week get better because they got a long ways to go before they become a good team. They were a great team last year, but that was last year. In football, everything starts anew. I mean, everyone's seen it, how teams can go from being good to bad in little to no time. The Pittsburgh Steelers 2 years ago won the Super Bowl. Last year, they didn't make the playoffs. This year, aside from the Denver game and the Arizona game, they look like a Super Bowl contender again. So things happen in a very short span in football, and the Bears have not done the little things throughout the season that winning teams do. They don't finish their blocks. They don't make big plays, and that's something the Bears' defense used to always do. They don't tackle well. I mean, these are things they can improve, and these are things they can do right, but they got to do it slowly because they're not all of a sudden going to become the best tackling team in the league. It doesn't happen overnight. They could be, and they have been for most of their time under Lovie Smith's tenure, but it's not going to happen overnight. I want to see constant improvement, and one guy that really improved is a guy that got called out a lot last week, and that's Brian Urlacher. He didn't have his best game. I wouldn't even say he had a Pro Bowl game, but he was around. He was actually making plays, and he was in the picture, and that made the defense better. Tommy Harris stepped up. But the most important thing about this defense is Trumaine McBride is getting more experience. This is a rookie, had his second start. He made a couple big plays. He also had some suspect plays. But if this guy can turn things around, it's going to make the Bears a lot better late in the season and going on to next season because it's going to allow them, if a Vasher or a Tillman go down, to be less susceptible because you'll have Ricky Manning, one of your Vasher/Tillman, and McBride. So that's going to be nice to see. And Vasher's on his way back. He may play this Sunday.
So you have Vasher, of course, also Darren Walker. He missed last game. He's set to come back. So the defense is slowly healing. So maybe that could be a potential thing that could kind of get them going. But like you said, if it comes down to simply making tackles, that's something maybe not two guys can necessarily change. It can obviously make your team better, but if the other guys aren't tackling, the other guys aren't tackling.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I still think the two most key guys they need back are Tommy Harris and Brian Urlacher, the healthy, real versions of those two guys. And Urlacher showed that maybe it's not his back, maybe he's going to be better, and it's just a matter of motivation and him getting more fired up and more pumped up and kind of ready to go. Although there was obviously something that has been bothering Urlacher this season. And then in Harris's case, you know, he's been having that lingering hamstring issue stemming back from last year when he missed the remaining part of the season when he tore it. So you have both of those things factored in. And when you get the explosive Tommy Harris and the explosive Brian Urlacher, this defense goes from a maybe 18th or 20th ranked defense to a number 3, 2, or 1 ranked defense just with those two guys back, let alone getting a Vasher and a Darren Walker back.
Well, the big thing then, obviously, you get Vasher, you get Darren Walker. If Tommy Harris and Brian Urlacher could show that they get a little bit healthy for next week's game, you play next week's game, which is against the Lions, and then you have that very, very big, at least in the Bears' case, bye week. So if they could go out there, get out of next week's game, get out of this Sunday's game healthy, you have that bye week right after them, because then they would, if a win, they would be, you know, at 500. You'd have that bye week right after them. That's going to give them, hopefully, in many of the guys' cases, enough time to get healthy and to obviously make a nice little run down the stretch.
Exactly, and that has to be the Bears' goal. And for the Bears to win in Detroit, their defense is going to play have to play better, and it's going to have to come from their secondary. Vasher is not going to is going to have to come in and make an immediate impact, and then McBride and Manning are going to have to handle the third and fourth options on that Detroit Lions team, because that's a deep Lions secondary or a receiving core when you have Mike Ferry as your third receiver, Calvin Johnson, and obviously Roy Williams, and they have a solid tight end. This is a good passing offense the Lions have, and there's no secret to the fact that they're 4-2 because of John Kitten and that pass attack.
So obviously it'll be a challenge. It'll be a challenge for the Bears.
It'll be another must-win game for the Bears, and if they can win that game, get into the bye week, because if you win that game, it's going to be because you played a pretty good game, and the defense will have had to step up, because there's not going to be a poor game against the Lions. It means the Lions are going to be able to score 30-plus points, and I don't see the Bears matching that. I really don't.
Now, as far as the offensive game as a whole, Robbie Gould had to do a lot of the work last game, but that last drive, for considering 2 minutes, and supposedly the headset wasn't working properly. I know originally the report was the headset wasn't working at all. I think Brian Greasy said, I don't want to take all the credit. Do you think it was a possibility? Let's say the headset wasn't working, and Brian Greasy did go out there and do that all on his own, and did make all the play calls on his own. Is that kind of a sign of what Brian Greasy could do, or is that kind of a knock on the Bears coaching staff that it took them all game for a situation where they couldn't communicate with the coaches before they actually put up a drive of 97 yards?
There's no doubt Ron Turner is a bad offensive coordinator. I think it's become very apparent with the fact that his play calling is too vanilla and it's too transparent. It's too easy to get a read on what the Bears are doing. I took notes again for another consecutive week on the fact that when you send these receivers in motion, I've never seen them not run the ball, never throw a play action, never really throw anything out there. However, to Turner's credit, he's gotten Hester more involved, and Hester's made some plays, and he's gotten Olsen more involved, and he's stuck with Cedric Benson a bit more. He's been a bit more patient on the running game. But Ron Turner just isn't it.
Did you see, and this might be hard to answer, did you see anything different during that drive? That maybe you saw a play that you're thinking, wait a minute, that's not typical of a Ron Turner call? Or was it just a matter of it could have been a possible Ron Turner call, but they just simply executed it? Was there any signs that, you know what, maybe Ron Turner – there was there any signs of it not being a Ron Turner play?
Well, I think the reality is, as much as I like to say that it's, a knock on Ron Turner, the 2 minute drill of the offense is pretty much entirely called by the quarterback. And that's regardless of whether your headset's working or not. Typically, only when the play is dead do you actually go to the sidelines for a play. And the benefit of that is that you are allowed to make plays, you're allowed to make the in-huddle decisions, and it makes personnel changes for the defense to be difficult. So you can slide in your offense to packages and basically force the defense to have to play. They may be in a nickel situation when they don't need the nickel back. They may not have enough corners and have to have a linebacker cover one of your key offensive players, and because of that you get the mismatch. I mean, that's the whole point of it, and that's why Peyton Manning, he uses that so much to his benefit, plus just doing that wears out the defense because you have consistent plays just going in.
Now, you brought up the whole thing with Devin Hester. It was actually a play in the game where the Bears had to use one. They had two timeouts kind of late in the fourth quarter. They had to use one of them, or maybe it was the third quarter. They had used one of them on Devin Hester, who really didn't know where he was setting up. So it does seem that Devin Hester is still kind of learning the offense, but it is kind of nice to see that he is being used a little bit more. And really in that game, he wasn't used at all when it came to the actual kick or punt return, because they avoided kicking to him altogether. What was your whole reaction to that, to the fact that the Philadelphia Eagles avoided him all game, and do you think that bit him in the ass at all? Do you think the field position actually played a big role in it?
I think that it was a good move by the Eagles. At the same time, I think that even though Hester, I know, touches, he helped the Bears because the Bears just killed him in the field position battle. They were consistently getting good field position because of the Eagles' unwillingness to kick to him. And offensively speaking, he did a great job. Turner did a great job getting him involved. And you can obviously see that Hester is not quite ready because he got lost in some plays. But that's why Musa Muhammad, and I've kind of hampered on the fact that having that veteran wide receiver like Muhammad around helps so much, because without Muhammad there, they don't win that football game. They don't. Hester has a couple illegal procedure type plays that turned into first downs because Muhammad called the timeout or Muhammad addressed him and got him the right way. Muhammad finishes blocks. He does so many little things. And then obviously you have the touchdown catch, the game winner. I mean, you just don't win that game without that type of veteran leadership. And having Muhammad around is going to turn Hester into a guy that could develop into Steve Smith. Remember, Muhammad was around Smith when he was young in Carolina.
Good point.
So let's not forget, he's seen an explosive type receiver like that.
Okay. My question was, and I didn't ask it properly. I guess my whole thing was, would Hester need to be more involved in the offense now if teams do take the Philadelphia Eagles approach where just completely avoid kicking to him? If that's the case, he's got to get more and more and more involved in the offense because you got to give him the ball at some point during the game. Otherwise, he's pretty useless to just kind of sitting back in the backfield as a decoy, as a way to get good field position without him touching the ball.
Well, I think regardless, they need to get him more and more touches because he's that explosive. He's shown that he can get past the secondary and the safety, the corner and the safety on deep routes, which is going to spread the field and allow Greasy to take a couple shots downfield, which pulls the linebackers away from the line of scrimmage and maybe enables Benson to hit some bigger holes. Plus, it opens up for the shorter slot slants and other crossing patterns. So really, Hester on the field, I want to see more and more of him, whether he's returning kicks or not. And when I say returning, I mean actually having the opportunity to return and getting balls kicked to him.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap up the Bears discussion soon because we're going to have Tony on, right?
Yeah, Anthony. We're going to get him on right now. I want to say that you, the listeners, have said that you want to hear us talk about the Blackhawks. Mario and I have pretty much admitted the fact that we know very little about hockey. So what have we done? We went out and got an expert from SoxTalk.com, TalkBeehawks.com, and a guy that has some connections because he works in the newspaper industry. So without further ado, we'd like to bring in our special guest, Anthony Mazzucco, a.k.a. Tony8207. So, Tony?
We're connecting with him. He's coming here shortly. Be patient. Anthony.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
How you doing?
Good.
All right. So you're finally on. Is there any, like, is there anything you want to get off before we start talking about Blackhawks hockey? Maybe you've heard us say some things the past week or two that, you disagreed with, or there's just something that you've seen happen in terms of baseball, White Sox, or the Bears, or the Bulls, or the Blackhawks. Well, I guess not the Blackhawks. We're going to talk about that for the next 10, 15 minutes. But is there anything that you want to kind of share to the listeners, that anything you got to get off your chest?
Get off my chest about the Hawks?
Oh, no, about any other sports team before we turn to the Hawks.
Oh, well, I just, because of the way the Sox season has gone, it really left me with a sour taste in my mouth. It feels like the Sox season was over 4 months ago. And in reality, I guess it was. But it just seems like I haven't seen a good baseball game in a long, long time played by the Sox, and it just left me with a bad taste in my mouth, and I think that's why I've latched onto this Blackhawks team so much. We're season ticket holders for the Sox, and we're really debating whether or not to come back this season because of the lack of performance on the field this season.
Well, at least the other teams, at least the Blackhawks seem like they're kind of on the rise because for the first time in I'm not sure how many years. I know I was a somewhat Blackhawks fan at one point in my life, and that was many, many years ago. But for the first time in a long time, they not only seem to have the talent on the ice, but there's this whole TV deal going down. Obviously, it's kind of too late in the year for the Blackhawks to just start throwing all their home games on TV. But the reports are now that about 5 to 7, I believe, home games are going to be televised at some point this season.
Mario, you cut out a little bit there, but
it was regarding the TV schedule. The latest report, there was a rumor saying that the Blackhawks might have 5 to 7 home games televised on Comcast this year.
What it sounds like is the first game that should be aired is on the 21st against the rival Red Wings at home. I can't blame the Hawks for not being able to get all of them on TV right away, as the facts that came out from Rocky Wirtz. Obviously, Comcast plans their schedule almost a year in advance, so there's obviously time slots taken out by the Bulls and other programming. But it's just a huge positive step in the right direction. I think all Hawk fans hoped that this day would come, especially after the passing of Bill Wirtz. But to see it happen so quickly has just been very encouraging, and not to mention the play on the ice. I guess it wouldn't be as exciting if the product that was going to be shown wasn't very encouraging, but the team itself has just been playing tremendous hockey and, more importantly, exciting hockey. And fans want to see it, and it's a no-brainer to get these games on as quickly as possible so
yes.
More fans can see the future on the ice.
The talent on the ice of the Patrick Haines and Taze, those guys are obviously going to keep fans to go into the game or watching the game, whatever. But in order for them to even get interested now, I think they have to put them on TV. You know, I was actually thinking before the show that it seems like there's four types of Blackhawks fans now. You have the fans who are still going to the games and very much supporting the teams. You got people who are following the team but not really supporting them, not really going to the games. And then you got people like me who are just simply disconnected for so many years. And I think by them putting it on TV, I think they have a chance to kind of catch all of them very, very quickly. Because like any other team, you know, if you were to say that the White Sox home games are going to be on TV next year, the Cubs home games are going to be on TV next year, it's no big deal. But to say the Blackhawks home games, because it looks like probably next season the Blackhawks home game will probably be on TV, that's got to be a huge, huge step, more so than any other team, because they've been such a poor organization. So even the smallest, the most common thing to put your home games on TV, is it could be a huge step in getting a lot of people back interested in the Blackhawks.
Absolutely. And as a lot of Chicago sports fans know, back in the 60s, 70s, and even 80s and 90s, you know, the Hawks really owned this city. It's always been a Bears town, but the Hawks were, you couldn't find a ticket there for a long time. And while, you know, the United Center has become, over the last few years, there's been a lot of empty seats, those fans are still here. They're still in Chicago. A lot of them are still here, and they still are hockey fans.
They're just at the Wolves games.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Or, you know, they just have a bad taste in their mouth after everything that's gone on in the last 10 years or so. And I think, you know, certainly the passing of Bill Wirtz is tragic, and it is any time that happens. But it's almost coincidental that everything is happening kind of at the same time, with not only with the TV trying to come back and get games back on TV, but the resurgence of the play on the ice and the young kids. It just, everything about this Blackhawks franchise is on the upswing. And it's just a really exciting time to be a Blackhawks fan after the 10 plus years we've had to deal with of just terrible hockey.
Yeah, I know. I got the press release. I think what was it, Monday? They got the press release that they were talking with Comcast. And I know somewhere in the press release, I'm not sure in the exact word they used, but it was kind of like somewhere along the terms of it was vital, or it was very important for them to get the games back on TV. And you knew that at least maybe Rocky Wirtz had this thought in mind for years, and I'm sure people in the Blackhawks had to know this for years. But it almost seemed like Bill Wirtz may have just been simply too stubborn to actually make the change. Because leaving them off TV, I can't really see how it would have been a financial decision for them, but more just a guy being stubborn.
No, you know, and what it all came down to from everything the public could gather was that Bill Wirtz still held his father's principles when he was an owner. So the Blackhawks, up until last season, had an owner that held 1920 principles to the present day. That's the type of owner Bill Wirtz was. And Rocky realized that you cannot run a professional franchise in 1920s fashion. It can't be done. You will not succeed by doing that. And clearly the Hawks have not been succeeding over the last 10 years, especially when times have changed. So Rocky made a point, and he's a smart enough man to know he has to reconnect with those fans that have gone away. As I said, those fans are out there, and I really believe they want to support a good Blackhawks franchise and team. They're out there, and Rocky yes. knows how vital it is to reconnect with those lost fans and bring them back to Madison Street, get that place rocking again.
I think that's definitely possible, because I think there's a lot of Hawks fans, or at least guys who don't even consider themselves Hawks fans, who would definitely jump on this. And I think the fact that the media's talking about this, and when it's finalized, if 5-7 games are going to be on TV, and if they actually get it to where next year's games are going to be on TV, people are going to know about it. And when you got these young players coming in, which I kind of want to talk about next, that's only going to add to it. But let's get into these young players. Obviously, Patrick Kane and Taze. You know, all week, you know how many times I've said his name all week just in conversations, and I keep on switching. I go Toes, Twos, Taze.
Yeah.
It's Taze.
Those damn Canadians.
Those damn Canadians. I know. That's probably the one thing that'll keep people away from hockey. but these two young guys are just...
They're phenomenal. And
so early tonight, in the season.
And as of tonight, even, you know, I believe they're in the second intermission as we speak right now, and Taves put one in the net, and Kane's got the other two. The Hawks are on 4-3 right now, but Taves and Kane have registered all the goals. They're phenomenal. I was in attendance for the game on Friday night against the Avalanche, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen it, the Taves goal. If you haven't, check it out on YouTube. It's all over the place. Just type in Jonathan Taves. You'll find it. He had a Gretzky-esque goal on Friday night that really set the place jumping. It was the first goal of the game. And just seeing that talent on the ice, the line, their Taze and Kane are both on the same line together. And you always know when they're on the ice. They're that apparent, and they're that much better than pretty much everybody else on the ice. Their talent level is shoulders above anything Blackhawks fans have seen in a long time. Maybe outside of Havlat, the 30-some-odd games he played last year. These guys are just, they're bursting with talent, and having an 18- and a 19-year-old lead your franchise is something that's very exciting, very exciting.
Now, here's a question for you. We've had Kane and Taze really step up. You've had the young play of guys like Keith and Seabrook, and do these young guys have enough veterans around them to make that chase for the seventh or eighth spot in the playoffs? Or is this a team that's going to have to go out and make another move? Or is this the type of team that's going to actually hold off on making that move and pretty much plan on going next year if the young players aren't able to kind of rally together a playoff season?
You know, Jason, that's a really good question, and it's a question I don't – because of how early it is in the season, I'm not sure. The loss of Martin Havlat was huge for the Hawks. Havlat was a wing that the Hawks acquired last season from Ottawa. It was kind of like a salary dump for Ottawa, and the Hawks were able to capitalize. He came in being injury prone, and that was a risk. And Havlat missed about 35 games last season. However, when he was in the lineup, he was a point-a-game player, which is fantastic in the NHL. He really makes that much of an impact. And this season, coming into the season, first game, late in the third period, Havlat went down with a shoulder injury that has plagued him his entire career. And it was a big blow for the Blackhawks, a big loss. And because of that loss, I really questioned the depth left on the team. And anytime you lose a superstar like that, a dynamic player like that, it's going to hurt. It's like losing a three or four hitter in your lineup, baseball-wise. So, however, as of their 5-3 start, as of coming into the night, my expectation has changed a little bit. I'm going to be disappointed if they don't sneak into the playoffs, and I can't believe I'm saying that given the history of this team the last 5-6 years, but they should jump in this. They should be able to get in this 7 or 8 spot. They got guys, like you said, a guy like Robert Lang, who was a veteran center that was signed out of Detroit, Yannick Perreault, another center who is renowned basically as the best face-off man in the game. And they got other veterans like Martin LaPointe, and then a couple guys in the blue line, Brent Seabrook, like you mentioned, and then Brent Sopel. They signed a 31-year-old rookie, I guess you could call him, out of Sweden, Magnus Johansson, who has stepped in admirably. So there certainly is some veteran leadership on this team. Another guy, Kevin Adams, was an assistant captain on the Carolina Hurricane Stanley Cup winning team a few years ago. So there are some veterans to lead them. Hopefully guys like LaPointe and Lang can kind of mentor guys like Kane and Taves. But, you know, if they don't sneak into that playoff spot, it's not going to be the worst thing in the world. Dale Talon, the general manager, has set up this club very nicely for the future. There's a lot of, not dead weight coming off the books next season, but some expiring contracts that are certainly a little bloated that certainly will not be missed. And they're set up very, very well for the future, not only cap-wise and money-wise, but with prospects in this system, guys like Jack Skilly and Dave Bolin, Brian Bickle, Troy Brower, Michael Blunden, Cam Barker, goalie Corey Crawford. All these guys are higher class talents and have got them ranked as, I believe, the third ranked farm system in all of hockey. So guys like, you know, Flash Tizzle should be letting their chops with a farm system like that.
I got a question. One of the guys you brought up is Cam Barker. He came up last year. He's got a big big body as a, I think he's a defenseman. He really checked around, and then he got a little bit. It looked like he got tentative later on after his initial comeback. What's his status? Is he still considered, you know, a top tier defense prospect?
You know, Barker, from what I gather, he is around the league. I think Hawk fans have soured on him a little bit, and I'm not really sure if that's fair or not. Barker was drafted in the first round, third overall in the 04 draft. So obviously there's big, big time expectations for the young defenseman. However, you know, he's still extremely raw, extremely young. He's a 21-year-old kid. It seems like his stock has fallen a bit just because of his games last year. Last year he played 36 games, was a minus 12, and that's obviously not that encouraging. But I still have a lot of hope for him. Like I said, 21-year-old, high draft pick defenseman. I certainly think it's premature to write off anybody that young, especially someone with that high of a status in the draft. I just think it's way too early to write off anybody like that.
And what was it specifically about his play last year? Because I know when he was kind of came up initially, there were talks about him being one of, you know, a premier scoring defenseman, kind of like the Chris Pronger type. I mean, he's big, he's physical, and apparently he's got a pretty good shot.
Who can help you
on the point.
Gase, you cut out there. Who are we talking about? You cut out there.
Pretty much talking again about Cam Barker, about how when he came up, this was a guy that was considered, you know, this was last season that he was considered a guy that could be a Chris Pronger type number one defenseman, and that he could help immediately on the power play and help on the point with a strong slap shot and could be more of an offensive defenseman that can put in some points.
I still think that holds true. I think there's still a lot of potential there, and I think this season, while I want them to make the playoffs, I still think this year is more of the learning experience and the growth aspect, and I still think that can happen. So I think they're on the right track. Definitely.
Where do you go ahead, Jace.
When it comes to this still being kind of in your mind, you said, yeah, we want to make the seventh or eighth spot. Where do you think the Blackhawks are going to draw the line of whether they give up a young defenseman? Because I've seen some rumors that Seabrook, who's, you know, really highly thought of amongst the rest of the league, he hasn't exactly lived up to his hype in Chicago, just like Keith hasn't, who's another young defenseman. Where do the Blackhawks draw the line of, you know, maybe trading a guy like Seabrook for a more veteran center or offensive presence that's going to help him now, as opposed to holding off and being patient?
You know, that's the line Talon has to figure out. That line's going to be drawn much more clear as the season progresses and it gets near the deadline. As I named off that laundry list of prospects the Hawks have, while that looks good for the future, as we know, prospects, their second most importance is in a trade. Maybe their first overall importance is a trade. Secondly, is helping the original team. When you have that kind of list of prospects, there's availability for a trade, and Talon certainly has the ammunition to fire off a big deal. Those rumors about Seabrook, you mentioned those were a little older, but I certainly think they could still hold true. If the Hawks are, let's say, in the sixth and seventh spot near the deadline, which I could very easily see happening, and maybe a Havlat isn't coming along as quickly as possible. He's supposed to be back in 4 to 6 weeks, but you know, with the rehab like that on their shoulder that's been injured. Who knows if that's if he's going to come back healthy. Talon's going to need to figure out whether or not he's going to go for it now or he's going to keep this young core together and see where it takes him. I certainly don't think Talon's going to make a move where he trades a Brent Seabrook for a three-month or four-month player in a contract year. If he's going to trade a Seabrook and maybe another piece, it's going to be for a guy that's probably going to be around here for a couple more years, which wouldn't be the worst move in the world, I think, if you could get value for one of the young guys. But I just think, you know, with them at 5-3, I think it's way too early to tell. Their record, as the time goes on, will certainly give us a better idea of where Talon is going to take this team this year and in future years.
One thing I wanted to bring up, and actually DeBajo and Knight have brought it up, is Nikolai Hyblin obviously signed a huge contract, I think, 2 years ago. Hasn't really lived up to it. What are your general thoughts on him and as far as the plans? I think he's only got 2 years left on his deal, but maybe the plans for him next year.
You know, Hyblin is a tough case because I personally think he's been a little bit of a product of the defense in front of him, especially the last couple years. With having, you know, Seabrook and Keith are still young guys. I'm down on Duncan Keith, but Seabrook and Keith are young guys, and they were even younger last year and the year before, and that's pretty much who Hobby Boulin had in front of them for the majority of the time. I don't think this club has been that good defensively over the last couple of years, and they still are a work in progress this season, and I think Boulin's caught a bad rap because of that. I certainly don't think he's lived up to his $6+ million contract a year. He's making a lot of money. I believe at the time when he signed the deal, it was the most for a goaltender. And I certainly don't think he's lived up to those numbers. But I also don't consider him a bust as a free agent signing, as many people in Chicago do, just because of the defense around him. And I think hockey fans are seeing maybe in New Jersey, Martin Brodeur's gotten off to an awful start. And New Jersey lost a bunch of defensemen, and they changed up their style a little bit, and they're leaving Brodeur out to dry, and he's not looking like that all-world goaltender he used to. I think defense played a lot in the goalie's role, and I think Boulin's been hung out to dry a little bit too much in his time with Chicago. So as regards to the next year, one of their prospects I named, Corey Crawford, is a goaltender who has some hype around him. And I could definitely see Boulin in his last year of the deal sticking around, obviously, especially if the Hawks are in a type of playoff mode for next year, especially as they should be. But Crawford backing him up, and then when that time comes after next season, Boulin will be a free agent. I believe at that time he'll be about 35. Hopefully with the development, this Corey Crawford should be ready, or they go out and get another free agent goaltender. So I certainly don't think Boulin will be back after his contract. I think he'll be a little older and maybe we'll have to take a backup job. But long statement short, I think Boulin's caught a little bit of a bad rap here.
Bottom line, if you had to make a prediction, what's going to be the key for the Hawks to get into the playoffs? I've heard a lot about how the Hawks have problems offensively, but when I've watched, you know, the few games I have, and I'm an amateur when it comes to even analyzing hockey, I see that the young players like Keith and Seabrook have bad, dumb turnovers, and because of that, they give up cheap goals. And as much as I hear about the offense, I still think it's the young defensemen and pretty much the lack of defensive prowess that's going to get them in the end. Is your take similar to that, or is it more the offense, and where do you see them finishing off?
Well, I think I agree with you, Jason. I think it's twofold. I think, one, the special teams need to improve both ways, penalty killing and power play. This weekend in Toronto, they had a big boost. They had 4 power play goals. One was an empty netter, but either way, it was 4 power play goals. But special teams are just huge for this team. They've been poor the last 5 or 6 years, and the reason for that, in my opinion, is skilled players. On a penalty kill and a power play, your skill players really shine because there's more ice to work with, and the more talented players are on the ice during those times, and the Hawks have lacked in that category. They simply have not had the talent to compete with many other clubs, and therefore their penalty kill and power play has lacked. This year it's getting a little better because of the more skill that's on this franchise. So I definitely think if the special teams improve, you're going to see the Hawks continue to play good hockey. And I think you're right, the defense is key. This is a very young core with Seabrook and Keith being the core. I really like the addition of Brent Sopel out of Vancouver. He was on a tryout with Detroit. But the defense is going to be key. If these guys can learn quickly on their job and, as you say, Seabrook and Keith limit stupid turnovers and guys like Andre Zuzan and Magnus Johansson can really step up their game and be the wall that Boulin needs in front of them, this team should excel. But, it's obvious special teams and defense are key to any team, but they're really going to make the they're really going to take the Hawks as far as they want to go.
All right, Tony, I think we're gonna call this a segment.
But well, you know what, guys? Before I go, I have a haiku I want to read. I'm just playing.
Haikus are shorter though, so you go ahead.
No, I'm good. So, all right, guys, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll definitely do this again.
All right, sounds good. All right, guys, take care.
All right.
See you, Tony. So, folks, that was Tony. He was giving you an educated take of the Blackhawks because we clearly can't do much when it comes to the state of hockey.
But you know what?
And hockey in Chicago is becoming a sport again.
Yes.
Thanks to, I hate to say it, thanks to the passing of Bill Wirtz. And
don't hate to say it. You know what? The whole thing with Bill Wirtz, he might have been a nice guy, and obviously you don't wish anyone dead. But when you're in the public eye, you have to go out there, especially as an owner of the Blackhawks, you have to realize that what you do as your owner of the Blackhawks or as an organ or as a sports franchise is going to affect the way people look at you. And if you do the things that he's done, you know what? The passing of him has helped his franchise. At least it appears so. At least it appears they're on some type of right track. So I think it's hard to really say that that's necessarily a bad thing to say, although it might be a bad thing to say.
You know how we know it's on the right track? Because that move has gotten us, Southside Report, to discuss hockey. It really has. I mean, the explosion that's came out of, you know, the Wirtz move and Jace, his exciting players like Kane and Taze.
When I was young and at that age to where I could potentially be a Blackhawks fan, probably around the same age that I started watching the White Sox, I would listen to the Blackhawks game. I remember actually listening to a playoff game with the Avalanche where I'm not, for some reason I couldn't watch it on TV. I don't know if it was when televised or whatever. I remember sitting up all night listening to it on the radio. And if they put these games back when they're home, I will watch this team every chance I get. The only reason that stopped me from watching it is that I don't know when they're playing or not. I don't want to have to look in the schedule and see if they're home or away to decide if I can watch them or not. I want to be able to say, hey, the Hawks are playing tonight. I'm going to watch them, no matter if they're home or away. And if they do that, which it seems, once again, 5 to 7 games is what they're reporting at. If they do that, and if they go full on next year, I'm going to watch this team. I will. And I think a lot of other people who are bigger Hawks fans than I would be would definitely do so. So I think this team is definitely on the right track. And God, with the talent that they have and obviously the way they're playing right now, it could be pretty damn fun here with the Blackhawks, especially with all the other Chicago teams kind of flailing at the moment, except the Bulls.
Yes, don't leave out my Bulls because we're discussing them this week.
We are discussing them this week. They're actually playing a game right now. They're kind of getting their asses kicked by the Dallas Mavericks, but it's a preseason game. However, I'm looking at the box score because I'm obviously not watching the game, and one thing that I'm noticing that I think was kind of a problem last year and the year before, and I know it's a preseason game, but the Dallas Mavericks have shot 39 free throws to the Bulls 22. Does that seem to be just a year in and year out problem for the Bulls?
It's always going to be a problem when you have a team that really doesn't take the aggression on. They don't shoot a lot of free throws. They don't have that star. The Mavericks have Dirk Nowitzki. They have Josh Howard. And to a point, they even have Jason Terry, all guys that are going to get to the free throw
line.
They're
500
Howard,
from it. That's the worst part. They're 12 of 23 from the free throw line. That's the scary part. Sure, you may not have guys to go to the lane, but if you do get to the free throw line to shoot 50%,
but you also have to remember the Bulls have made strides the past couple of seasons when it comes to getting the free throw line.
Yes.
Ben Gordon has became better at driving to the basket. Luol Deng's gotten more aggressive. Kirk Heinrich seems to be getting smarter at that.
Yes.
And they probably will have a bit of a attack down in the low post with Joe Smith. Joakim Noah, Tyrus Thomas, Ben Wallace, you know. So, and plus it's a preseason. It is a preseason. So it'll be interesting to see what happens regular season.
You forgot to mention Aaron Gray.
Oh, I intentionally left out the new starter, potentially Aaron Gray. We're going to get into that. But before we do, I think we're going to first hit on two main topics when it comes to the Bulls. And those are the two young superstars that are without long-term contracts. That's Ben Gordon and Luol Deng. Both suffered injuries in preseason. Gordon is playing in his first game tonight after missing everything else with a sprained ankle. And then you have Luol Deng, who hurt his wrist, who's been a star for the Bulls. I mean, he's been consistent. He's had a couple injuries in his time, mainly due to some physical play and some tough shots that he took. But this guy's been a star. Ben Gordon has been a great scorer on the Bulls. Do you think the Bulls should go after and sign both of these guys now? Is now the time, or should they just wait a season? Because they can obviously wait, and they'll be restricted free agents next year and take them that way.
I think Deng is a no-doubter. You watched him in the playoffs last year, and he seems like a guy who maybe he's not going to be the super scorer, but he just seems like that all-around player who is just going to get better and better and better and could be an all-star. Whereas with Ben Gordon, I'm not a basketball analyst, but it seems like there's more talent at the guard position in the NBA than at the small forward position. And I think when you have a small forward like Deng, I think you have to put more resources into keeping him over a guard, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and I think the key is the Bulls are going to go, and I'd be shocked if the Bulls didn't keep both of these guys, barring a Kobe Bryant trade, which we're going to discuss in the next part of this Bulls segment that's going to carry on for the next 10-11 minutes till 8 o'clock when we cut the show. And Ben Gordon, though, the thing is, he's gotten better every season, and we know he has an innate ability to score, and the Bulls really lack that go-to guy because Luol Deng has not developed into a go-to scorer.
His ceiling,
he has
though.
His really good games, but his ceiling could become a go-to scorer. I have no doubt that Luol Deng can be a top 15 player in the NBA. He can become that star the Bulls kind of need in that lineup that probably will push him over the top and give him an NBA title or two over the next 5-6 years. But Ben Gordon, if he continues to build and continues to get better, could still have quite the career in Chicago. And this is coming from a guy that's never backed Gordon. And I think Gordon's going to have his best season of his career, a much more complete season. I think he's going to put a major focus on his defense. And he'll never be great defensively. But I think we'll see fewer turnovers on the offensive side and a lot more consistent defensive play. Because defense isn't necessarily about athleticism. It's about focus.
Yes.
And Gordon has never really put 100% focus in that. But he's gotten to watch Kirk Heinrich. He's gotten to watch the Bulls thing. He's gotten to watch all the rest of the Bulls that really put that 100% intensity out there all the time. And because of it, the Bulls are consistently a great team. And it's just about getting your hand up, making sure you follow the ball from the chest and you don't fall for the little fakes. And doing those little things is going to make the difference between him being a horrible defender and him being an average defender.
Yes. And between guys like Heinrich and obviously Deng and a lot of guys on the Bulls who play defense, and knowing that you have a guy like Scott Skiles who wants you to play defense, and knowing that you improving defense is really gonna determine how great of a basketball player you are, I don't think there's no choice. And I think he is putting in, it seems like he's been putting in more of an effort, or at least more of a focus into it this offseason. So, but I think when it comes down to it, Deng is a priority, right? Deng is the priority. Over
yeah,
Gordon.
Number one, but barring a massive trade, both of those guys would be in Chicago for the next 4 or 5 years. And that goes along with Kirk Heinrich, because I don't see John Paxson making any major moves unless Kobe Bryant is able to come at a discount. And a discount means that the reports of Luol Deng, Kirk Heinrich, Tyrus Thomas, and number one draft pick is just unacceptable.
No.
That does not make the Bulls better.
No.
It may make them marginally better, but that's too big of a risk to go out and make that move. Way too big of a risk.
They're too good of a team to right now to do it. I mean, they've taken a lot of years to kind of build this team, and over the past two postseasons, they slowly showed progress. And you look at it this year, they look like they could go even further. To go out there and just kind of throw that all away for Kobe Bryant doesn't make much sense, especially when you're talking about throwing in a Deng or even a Heinrich. So I mean, obviously, Kobe Bryant is an alluring name, and he's going to get people's attention. And obviously, if the Bulls get him, they pretty much maybe put themselves on a whole nother level as far as a marketability standpoint and getting people's attention. it just doesn't really seem to make much sense seeing how much this team has worked to kind of have the squad that they do.
Yeah, the key with Kobe Bryant is if a trade is centered around Andres Nocioni and a Ben Gordon and a Tyrus Thomas and draft picks, you make that deal in a beat. I don't think the LA Lakers make that deal, but if Kobe Bryant puts it in his position where he kind of puts a gun to the to the Lakers, to Mitch Kupchak, to the ownership's head, basically, then that deal is best for the Bulls. It hurts the Lakers, but if the Lakers are going to have to get something for Kobe Bryant, and it looks like the only two options are going to be the Dallas Mavericks, and they're not going to want to deal in division or in conference with the Mavericks and Mark Cuban, or the Chicago Bulls, who can give them some young players, some young talent that's going to make them better, and they may just opt out and make that deal. But I don't think that happens now because Kobe Bryant still has another two seasons in L.A., even if he opts out of his contract. So I think what's going to happen is the Bulls are going to play out the season, and if they fail to make the finals, if they fail to make the strides that John Paxson needs, then at that point, the Bulls will go in, they'll make some serious talks, and they'll talk about making that deal with the Lakers. And they'll try to center around Nocioni and Gordon. And if it came down to it being Gordon and Heinrich, you still make that deal for Kobe Bryant because Kobe Bryant is the best player in the NBA.
I agree with that logic. I mean, you have to you give them kind of a year and see where this team goes. And I, from the looks, it seems like this team is only deeper. At least from my eyes, it seems like this team is only deeper, and they should be going a lot further into the playoffs. Now, we only got a few minutes left, but we're going to wrap this show up with a guy named Aaron Gray, who I personally know nothing about. All I know is that he could potentially be the new starting center for the Bulls.
Yeah, Gray, from Scott Skiles' standpoint, Gray's played great all preseason. Scott Skiles, up until about today, maybe yesterday, has said, oh, it's the preseason. You know, we don't really evaluate guys based on the preseason. We look at their effort. We look at the little things they do. But overall, just because he can score in the preseason doesn't make him score a legitimate scoring threat in the regular season. And then all of a sudden today he goes, hey, the way this guy's played, he's going to score. I don't care if it's the preseason. He's going to score in the NBA. And the talk of it is he's going to start. And what I want to know is this is indication of what Aaron Gray can do and what kind of steal he is in the second round. Or is this more of a sign that Joakim Noah, Tyrus Thomas, Joe Smith, you haven't cut it? Tyrus, you didn't work out hard enough. You didn't do what we asked you to do in the offseason over in the Berto Center, and we're disappointed with you. Joakim, we know you have a shoulder injury, and it's going to take you some time, but you're not ready in our eyes. And Joe Smith, we brought you in to be the veteran, but you're not healthy, and you're not producing. So we're going to go with Aaron Gray, the guy that's played hard all preseason, the guy that's actually delivered and put up some points and shown some positive things. And not only is Gray going to be helping himself in this, but maybe Scott Skiles is using a little mental motivation to those other guys to fire them up.
I know. I was actually listening to Skiles today, and two concerns he had with Gray is obviously the foul trouble, and I think that ties into he's pretty much a slow white guy.
Yeah, he's got Chris Mim-like upside, so to speak. He could become a solid 10, 12-point a game, 7, 8 rebounds. Maybe he gets up to 10 rebounds if he can box out. He's got a good NBA center body. He's not very physical, but he wasn't a horrible player in college. And there's no reason he can't have limited success in the NBA. And when it comes to fouls, I don't give a crap if he gets 6 fouls in 20 minutes because the Bulls have a lot of depth at that center position. They can throw a lot of guys out there. So it's just a matter of those 20 minutes being valuable minutes.
Yeah. The fouls really isn't a problem. As long as you have that depth, you could tolerate that because having a big guy in the middle, I think, is key. Even if the guy maybe isn't the most talented guy in the bunch, having a guy in the middle to kind of block that lane is huge in the NBA.
No doubt about it. And I think the surprising thing is this just shows why I think Scott Skiles is such a good coach. He evaluates things, and when he sees guys do what he wants, he's going to go out and he's going to play them. It may only be for a week, and it may just be to prove a point, but he's going to do it. And it's because he really takes away all the attitude and all the prima donna-ness of it, and he goes back to a 1940s, 1950s style that when these guys weren't making money, it came down to the coach and what the coach thought was best for the team. And he wanted to make sure that every single other player was doing what they thought as a whole was going to help the team. There was no me this, no me that, and a Scott Skiles team really has none of that. It's basically like a retro version of what it used to be with guys that are making $10, $15 million a year, depending if you're talking about Heinrichs or now that Nocioni got his new contract, obviously Ben Wallace. And it's just a refreshing thing to see. And I'm going to be rooting for Aaron Gray. I'll definitely be rooting for Tyrus Thomas. But Tyrus Thomas has some attitude issues. And he's basically the opposite of Joakim Noah, who's well-known for having a great work ethic and everything else. And I hope that this rubs off on Tyrus Thomas because I think that's the number one guy that Scott Skiles is kind of pointing his finger at and saying, hey, you need to do what we ask you to do because we ask you to do it for a reason. We want you to get better.
You know, it seems like here in Chicago – the Bulls and Blackhawks, you could potentially say that these have been the two franchises that have kind of been overlooked, at least from my perspective here in Chicago. These are two franchises that have been overlooked over the past few years, obviously with the Bears going to the Super Bowl last year, you know, and the Cubs this season, and then of course you had, you know, the White Sox in 2005. Yet right now when you look at it, these are probably two of the most promising franchises in Chicago right now, the Blackhawks with the youth, and the Bulls with a guy like Scott Skiles kind of running things as, and I don't give a shit who you are, I don't care how much money you make, you have to put in the effort, and anyone has a shot to make this team. So I know I'm looking forward to the Bulls. I know as soon as the Blackhawks get back on TV, I'm looking forward to them. And it kind of be a change of pace in Chicago.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think the two things I'm most interested to see out of the Bulls is, you know, the progression of their young players, because I've really came to appreciate the play of Kirk Heinrich, Ben Gordon, Luol Deng, and Andres Nocioni, those four guys. Because those four guys, there's no secret about it, those were the four guys, along with Scott Skiles and John Paxson, that turned the franchise around. It's those four individuals mixed in with the two guys running the show. Ben Wallace came in after the fact, and Cephalosha and some of these other young players came in after the fact. But those four guys have been that core of this franchise that's been growing. And this is a young franchise that wins, and it gets better, and it has the respect of the entire NBA. And I look forward to seeing those four guys, what they continue to do in the future, as well as the development of Cephalosha, Tyrus Thomas, and Joakim Noah, because that's probably the last young semi-elite talent this team's going to get, because this team isn't going to get high draft picks. They no longer have those New York Knicks lottery deals.
Well, there's so, always trades. They could always trade with the Knicks again.
It is true. Maybe they'll deal Tyrus Thomas for the next three first-round lottery picks. Maybe they'll do that. Or maybe they'll just give Isaiah Thomas some money, as Night Night points out, because he does owe, or him and the Knicks owe, what, $11.9 million for some wrongdoings, to say the least? There's that. We give you money, you give us draft picks. Eh? Reisdorf, go help him out.
And then if he's cleared with that, he could go out there and run up debt again by doing other things.
Exactly. It's the new Bulls philosophy. Get the Knicks in trouble.
Wait for Thomas to do something inappropriate. Give him money. We'll let him do it again. Give him money. It works out for the Bulls. We're going to have to call this a show. We went a little bit under an hour today because we had some technical difficulties in the beginning, which probably weren't even solved. I'm not sure if they were solved. Were the technical difficulties solved? Did our voices improve as the show go on? No? Nothing?
No, the voices, I don't know. Did they improve? The listeners, the people in the chat room, did the voices improve? Night Night, DeBeo, everyone else, we're looking at you. Oh,
yes,
they did.
Yes.
So we're working through those difficulties.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Next week, we're going to take callers. We're also going to have a Future Sox segment on, because we're going to be releasing the first ever Player of the Year Awards, documented by FutureSox.com. We hope to get big publicity out of this. Andrew Dunn of Future Sox, otherwise known as DeBale, the Aussie from Down Under. Well, where else is Australia? He's been reconciling it, so we'll probably get him on as a guest to talk a little
Australia,
minor league
though.
Baseball. And we'll obviously have the Bears, the Bulls, and
we'll
maybe
need
some
Australians
talk
on the show. I'll ruin it.
But yeah, we're going to be making this an international show next week, so we look forward to having you back here. We'll be here same time, same place, Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. West Coast time for all you people burning in the fires like I am.
Yes. Well, so I'm not sure if we talked about this last week, but starting next month, I don't even think I told you that. I talked to you about this, but I haven't kind of got a set time out. Next month, November 20th, I think, is the day. It's a Tuesday. Our show will be on from 10 to 11 o'clock.
Yeah, we're going to be pushing it back an hour.
We're going to be pushing it back an hour. Hopefully, yeah, I know. Hopefully that's fine with everyone. But that's kind of what it's going to be.
And when we make that out, we're going to have some, starting in about a month, we're going to have some special Bulls guests on to discuss Bulls basketball. And as always, if you have any friends that you think would be interested in the show, let them know about us. Get them out here, because the more listeners, the more interactive we can have this, the better we can be.
Yes.
And, you know, any feedback, leave it a post on the SoxTalk.com message boards, because we want to hear what we can do better. Because it's our effort to make this show continuously better. Oh, and we got to name the show. Yes. So post some suggestions.
Well, yeah, there we go. I think we might have to come up with maybe a few and then have a little poll on Sox Talk or something like that. We do have to come up with the name. I really don't want to have to think of one, but if I need to, I guess I will. See you next week.